Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, ratio analysis. And I thank you for coming on such a wintry day out there. I imagine I'll have a few students coming in here during the next few minutes. So, to start the ball rolling as usual. Now, again, this will be a day when you would want to have your computers out because we'll be using Excel through the day today. And also, another thing is that I want you to try to follow along, putting in what I'm doing, as far as Excel goes, but I will also upload what I'm doing here. My example, I'll upload that to your resources tab in VeggieNet so that you can have it there as a reference in case you get behind or you make something happens that you don't get it right when I'm doing it right here. But anyway, without further ado, we want to have a look at the markets and see if that kitty cat is still bouncing around, even though it's dead. Okay, cat, let's see what you're doing today. There is a lot of volatility. The markets are concerned. However, the idea that we are now in a bear market is speculative. You'll see for yourself here. Okay. To begin this, sir, is this a bull day or a bear day? Yeah, it is a bull day. And it is a pretty healthy bull. Now, the Dow was up, you know, a little bit, but that's because those are big companies. They don't react very much to anything. But then you get the Dow up almost 1% and the NASDAQ up almost 1.5%. I had taken a weird position. It was an anti-bear position. It wasn't necessarily a bull position. It was an anti-bear. And I was getting killed there, and for some reason, it just turned around this morning. Thank heavens I didn't lose everything, or I would have been eating my cat's food tonight. But it's kind of an odd market, though, because there is so much talk. Yeah, anytime now, here comes the financial apocalypse. And then here we have a couple of bull days strung together. And a lot of that, there's an old saying, there's an old term, and I'll show you exactly what that means in probably if I can next week, but it's called running out the shorts. It's when you have a lot of buildup of bear sentiment, and then you let those bears hang themselves out very far. They're sure it's a bear market. And then you do a bull run on them. And it's technically, it's now illegal, but, I mean, we're talking about finance, for God's sake. Running out the shorts, I have a real strong feeling that what's happening here, at least some of it, is running out the shorts. Which, interestingly enough, was what happened with those GameStoppers on Reddit. They ran out the shorts. They didn't know that's exactly what they were going to do, but they ended up a spectacular example of exactly that. Oil is really struggling. You can see it was piddling along, then it spiked, and then it's dropped, now it's bouncing back a little bit. We know where it wants to go. The question is, how is it going to get there? Gold and silver both taking their hits today. So we have the equities. Stocks are up. And that makes you sound fancy when you say, well, equities were up today. Well, that's just saying stocks were up. But equities were up, so gold and silver, metals were down, so there was money being pulled out of the metals, and it looks like it was going to stocks and equities, that is. But how about bonds? Well, the yield has fallen 2.5 basis points, which means that the price has gone up. So there was money flowing into bonds and into stocks today. and away from metals. God knows what's happening in the crypto market. I've given up on trying to figure that out. Now, London took a whack at the beginning, but then you notice that it stopped taking a whack. So there was some bad news. It got swallowed by the market, and the market farted on it, and then from there, it was just sort of piddled along. There was no more news. It just hung. Similarly, there was some hard bad news. Well, some seriously bad news there on the Nikkei at the beginning. Dropped it, and then it recovered, and then it just floated along. Apparently, there was some complex news at the beginning of the trading day in Tokyo, and then from there, everything was just like holding pattern because there was no more news that was significant enough to move equities. So there you are. That's sort of an overall look at what was going on in these markets today. Now, where does it go from here? It would be very hard to call this. Obviously, an intelligent investor has a judgment about where it will go from here. In a case like this, the big dogs are staying off the field. If you look at the volume on the S&P 500, those stocks, right now we're at midday. Now, notice that's actually about, so far we're about half of a typical day. So it looks like there's entry going on here of the heavy players. Do you see how this number, we're about at the midday point, maybe a little after that, and the volume is about half of what it was, what it has been on a typical day over the last year. So we see more activity than we have the last few days. And what has that activity done? It has created a bull run. So that would tell me, if I'm thinking, that the heavies are actually in a bullish mood. They're willing to move some money in now. The worries that were earlier in the week and last week are not there now. So that would tell me that I would anticipate that on Monday, and we'll see whether I'm right or not, I would expect the bull run to probably... It won't be a black swan. It does not look like that at all, unless something wild happens over the weekend. But it could be a mildly bull day on Monday again, because it looks like the bulls are coming in. There's more volume. That volume is to the buy side. And so there you are. Now, on to what we are doing for today's activities. These are the financial statements of Target, TGT, and these are actually, Target is going to be releasing its next 10K here in a while, but we're looking at what happened more than a year ago. But still, it's good. It's okay for financial analysis purposes. Now, there are two things that I want to bring up here. You've got this financial analysis formula. Sheet right here. Now, you might want to print that out and bring it with you. You are allowed to have that at the midterm exam. And you can even write a few explanations. Don't write the whole course on this sheet. You're allowed a note card for that. But you might want to scribble a few things on this for the midterm exam and for the final. So, for example, and I'm just going to go through these, and then we're going to look at them in the actual application to Target. Gross margin. Now, margin means a ratio. Now, gross margin is your gross profit as a percent of sales. It just tells you how many pennies of every dollar that came into the cash register survived wholesale. Now, that number can be all over the place. Operating margin, well, after you've paid your wholesale costs and also paid your salaries, your wages, your marketing, advertising expenses, your light bills, everything, delivery fees, how much survived at that point of every dollar? And the net margin tells you how much survived for the shareholders. That's what it means. How many pennies of every dollar that came in made it to the point where it belongs to the shareholders. Now, understand that the shareholders don't necessarily get that money. The company can choose to give some of it as a dividend, but they also may choose on behalf of the shareholders to plow it back into operations. If the shareholders get a dividend, that's a little bit more of a sure thing. It's not guaranteed, but it's more assured. If they put it back into the operations of the company, plow back, well, that would mean that they're expecting that to cause the stock price to go up, which would mean a capital gain for the investors. Okay. And then we go down here. I'll explain these as we go along, and I'm going to start kind of from scratch. Now, when you're doing these financial statements like this, the ones that will be critical to use are the income statement and the balance sheet and the statement of cash flows in some cases. Now, as I had cautioned before, you are definitely going to want to put in, if it's not already there, the gross margin line. The gross income line, I should say. It used to be a requirement to put it in there. Now, God knows what's a requirement, the way the SEC and the accounting standards work these days. But it is your revenue minus your wholesale cost, your cost of goods sold. And there it is. Now, I may be wrong about this, but I think that's the only one that you definitely need to fix if it's not there. I pull up some financial statements and it's there. Other ones, it's not. You need it for one of the ratios, the gross margin ratio, so you might as well put it in. And I'm thinking that there's not any other one that is missing. Well, there is one. A lot of companies don't put in the depreciation and amortization, which we need later for free cash flow analysis. They hide it up here, and then you have to go over to the statement of cash flows to find the thing. It's all over the place. Another thing I should point out, and I might have already said this, and I apologize if I have. There used to be a strict name for everything in a financial statement. Thou shalt call this line this. Now, that's somewhere along the line, it just, everyone calls it. So, for example, you'll see some companies call this operating income. Some will call it earnings before interest and taxes. Some will call it EBIT. And there are other ones, too, like that. Revenue, it could be called sales. SG&A used to be broken down, into the different parts of it on the income statement. Now it's not. It's just sales, general, and administrative expenses. So you have to go elsewhere in the financial statements to know how much of that was selling, how much of it was general, and how much of it was administrative. And there are some other lines here that we may use at the time being. And you want to have your balance sheet here. Now, what I usually recommend is that you take the balance sheet, hold down your cursor, and scoot it over here so that it's right there next to your income statement. Just a good thing to do. And then another thing. Find your statement of cash flows. Wait a minute. I thought I moved that over there to the income statement. I did. There's another one. Oh, that's the one I was. Wow. Okay, now scoot that over. You don't have to put it too close, but get the statement of cash flows over there. And there's another one, statement of retained earnings. You might want to push that over there. But for now, that's enough. We need these to do ratios, so it's best to have them together. Now, a little bit of background on best practices. I tried to do this in a seminar for professors, and they just looked at me like I'd fallen off out of a tree. Why would you even bother with that kind of waste of time? There is an old thing in gaming called Secure, Contain, Protect. As a matter of fact, there's a whole society that does it, and I've written some of the character stories for it, where you secure and contain and protect characters. But in Excel, it's hugely important. Secure your data. Contain it in a place where you can work on it outside of all of the other data, and then protect it by locking it down so idiots can't go in there and change important formulas or important numbers. In other words, what you want to do technically, and I won't get that far, is create what we call a dashboard. Something that the end users can see, possibly even plug numbers into and get new results. But you sure as hell don't want the end users to be prowling around in your core calculation sheets, in your core data sheets. I'll tell you where that came in very strongly. Four or five years ago, there was a finance treasury executive at a very large company. She was describing how they'd hired a guy who swore he had all these credentials and he was incredible in Excel. So what did he do? He got a hold of their big, massive, multi-worksheet core financial analysis spreadsheet. And he thought he could see all these better ways to do things. So he started tweaking formulas, changing numbers, and then he saved it. And no one knew what he had done until that saved version had gone and replaced the backup at the cloud servers. Well, once they found out what he'd done, they fired his ass. But the damage was done. You see, he was playing with these formulas and these calculations. They did not understand that you have to protect that data. It's best if your end users don't go in there and start asking stupid questions. Well, I don't really understand why you use equal sum of, well, you don't want that. You're the ones who are the financial engineers. They are the ones who consume the end product, what you've done. Now, obviously, you're going to want some people who can audit your work to see if it's right. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to insert, and this is only part of Secure, Contain, Protect, but I'm going to insert a sheet called Ratios. This will be my calculation sheet. Now, ultimately, I would also create a dashboard, a final sheet where all the numbers from these calculations came forward in a nice, pretty font, printable for the end users. I would want to do that at the end, obviously, but we're not going to go to a dashboard. I might show you one, well, I will show you one later in the course. But for now, this is enough, a sheet where you're not interfering with the data. You've secured the data. Now you contain the calculation. And ultimately, you would also want to protect them, lock down the sheet so that only certain users could get to it. But in this case, what we do here, now there's another thing that's going to happen here. If I were to go back to that financial analysis thing sheet, I would see that there were five categories. Profitability. And then under that, there was gross margin, operating margin, net margin, return on assets, and return on equity. And then I would see that there were some nice liquidity ratios. And those are the current ratio, the acid test, or what's, okay, it's called the quick ratio, but in our jargon, we call it acid. You'll hear me use the word acid. And then there's one that is not, it went away from the core teaching to people like you maybe 20, 30 years ago. But I use it, and I show it to you, and I was amazed that in the last year or so, there have been some analysts who have used it. Now, they didn't call it the burn ratio, but that was sure what they were doing, burn. There was a younger woman who was doing a financial analysis of GameStop before the Wall Street Bets rush. And she described cash divided by current liabilities for GameStop. She said, this is the most important one of all, and the cash divided by current liabilities of that company is staggering. It's enormous. And I thought, you just used the burn ratio. Where did you take that? I looked to see her name. I didn't recognize it, so she must have learned it from someone else. But, I mean, that is really ultimately, you see, these liquidity ratios tell you how many times over your current assets can pay your current liabilities. Now, the current ratio says current assets divided by current liabilities. The quick ratio says, yeah, but some of those current assets really aren't liquid, like inventory. How could you really turn that into cash in a desperate move to pay your current liabilities if you had to? No, not really. And the burn ratio, all it says is how much cash do you have on hand divided by current liabilities? In other words, in reality, the only thing, if you had to pay all of your bills that are due within a year immediately, realistically, the only thing you've got is cash that could really do that. So the burn ratio is sort of like the ultimate test. It's more acid than the acid test, if there's such a thing. But anyway, now there are a couple of debt ratios. Debt to total assets. And my God, okay, I'm going to cheat. You didn't see this. Ah, my God. Yeah. Times interest earned. Now, times interest earned is interesting to you because I'm going to ask you about it on a quiz and or a test or two. I'm not saying that I will, but I will. Okay? Essentially, times interest earned says, okay, you get down to operating income. That's how much money you have to pay your interest. How many times over can you do that? So, in other words, if my operating income is $500,000 and my interest expense that's due is $100,000, then my times interest earned is 500 over 100, which is five times. Five times over, you can pay it. Well, that's a great thing. That's very cool. The thing, though, is that the closer that gets to one, the more you begin to worry. Because if the times interest earned goes below one, let's say you had $90,000 at operating income and you had to pay $100,000 in interest, you're done. That's the end of the company. It's in bankruptcy because it can't pay, and the debt holders will shut you down. If you can't pay your interest expense, the debt holders will take away your company. You'll have to scurry to a bankruptcy court for protection from them, and then you'll have to go through a total reorg if the bondholders want to do that. But otherwise, you're done right there. So you never want that times interest earned to go below one. Now, again, I'm going to find a way to ask you that on an exam or a quiz. It's a big blinking red light. A company that started here in this town, it's called Steak and Shake. Their times interest earned was clearly aiming in the next quarter to go below one. And it was just like, are you kidding me? That Steak and Shake is done. Somehow they managed to barely pull it out of the fire. They negotiated part payment with their debtors that interest due. So they've survived for now. But I mean, that was really close. And the real question is, how many times can they get by with that before they finally give up the ghost? Steak and Shake was once a very powerful, profitable, expanding food chain, and now it's, you know, they do have that cheeseburger with the giant egg on top of it, so I think they should survive, but that's just me. Okay, now, asset activity. Ratios. Now, the asset activity ratios tell you how many times over they are using their inventory. So, in other words, if I would take, okay, sales divided, I'll get into that in a while. There's one here, the book brings it up, I believe, and it's in your formula sheet, but it's a real bear to actually find the information. It's your average day's collection period. And to do that, when you have to find out how many of their sales per day were on credit, that one is not that easy. It's in these mass, I mean, somewhere in all these worksheets, it's there, but that's way too much like work to find it. So, I mean, I don't even, I wouldn't expect you to do that one at all. Now, one thing I do want to point out, I think I already said this, but I'm going to point it out again. I actually don't care how awesome you are at calculating these ratios. You obviously need to do that. Clearly, you need to do it accurately. But in finance, we're all about saying, what does this mean? What does this tell us? And that's the whole point of what we do, is to actually interpret. Numbers mean nothing. It was one of those things like when I was in the PhD program at Ohio State, you would have these students from other countries and they were phenomenal at mathematics. I mean, they could just walk circles around. In that first year, it was all math. And so only two Americans, me and another young man, survived the first year. Then in the second year, they started making us explain what we were finding and use what we're finding to start to analyze the world around us. And that was when the students from other countries who were so good at math, they just started falling apart. We've got the calculations. What else is there? Interpreting them? What does that mean? Oh, okay. Okay. I want you to know what these stories are. Inventory, turnover, and asset turnover. Now, I want to look here real quick, see what, if I want to bitch about anything else. The market value, price earnings, market to book, I'm going to talk about those a little later in the course. The book goes through them now, but I mean, I've got the ones that I care about. Now, next thing. Do you notice how I just typed in information? I was a long time, among other things that I was doing, I was the head of education at a court reporting school. I was also the dean of legal studies and the chairman of the English department. And one of the things in transcription is don't, when you're working on some project, don't format at every step. Wait until you've got everything in and then format. So now here, I have, these were the categories. Whoops, I forgot to put in a line here, I'm sorry. Insert debt. So these are the categories, profitability, liquidity, debt, and asset activity. Now I can bold those. And then the subcategories. I can scoot those over. And then I can give myself room. Do the formatting later. Where this came into play, especially in transcription, was that the one thing we didn't want a transcriptionist to ever do was to correct a mistake. Ever. Because that slowed down transcription speed like you wouldn't believe. Just get it all in and then go back and fix everything. Make it pretty. Now we can go ahead. Gross margin. The gross margin is equal to the gross income divided by the net income. Oh, total revenue, I'm sorry. So what that tells us is that 29 cents of every dollar survived to the bottom line, to the survived wholesale. Now that sounds kind of wild. I mean, geez, only 29 cents was left after you paid the wholesale cost of the goods you sold? Yeah, that's not that unusual in a retail business. Now, in a service business, that number, that gross margin would be much higher because they don't have a cost of goods sold, or just a very minimal. Operating margin, that would be your operating income divided by your revenues. This says how much of every dollar that came into the cash drawer survived all of your costs, all of your operating costs. So in this case, it looks kind of pathetic. Only 7 cents made it from the cash drawer past all of the wholesale costs, salaries, wages, delivery fees, lights, heat. Well, actually, that's not bad. And now net margin is your net income. I said net, oh, there, net earnings. Okay, there's another one. Net income, it can be called net earnings. It can be called net profit, whatever, or called profit divided by your revenues. This is how much belongs to the shareholders of every dollar, about 4.7 cents. You see, all your bills have been paid. So this is what is called the residual income number. The residual is what belongs to the shareholders. They have the residual claim. The debt holders have the prior claim. Now, the ROA, return on assets. Now, this one is going to be your net earnings or net income or profit, whatever, divided by your total assets. Now, what this number tells you is if you thought of all of the assets of this corporation as a portfolio, how much does the portfolio earn? In this case, it earned about 8.5%. Now, is that good or is that bad? Okay, there are a couple of factors in here. You would have to consider what the average of the industry is, the comparables, the comps. Now, Standard & Poor's, I hate to tell you this, but on Monday I'm going to show you all these ratios are for, you can get them on Standard & Poor's. You just type the name of the company, click the ratios tab, boom, all of this comes out there. So in a way, it's we need to know how they're calculated, but it's like, geez. Okay, so now, the ROE is sort of like that, except it says, how much did the equity that was put into this company earn? You'd have to go down here to total shareholders' equity to find that one. There it is. You see that total shareholders' equity? From accounting, what that's telling us is, okay, shareholders bought stock in the IPO of Target. They also probably bought stock in seasoned offerings, other, you know, afterwards Target probably sold stock too. And then Target earned income, and then it paid some dividends. Whatever was left from that adds into it. So all of that was what the shareholders contributed in one way or another. How much did that earn? Well, 30%. That's damn good. I mean, by almost any standard, that's pretty darn good. Yeah, comps, I think we will go through just quickly looking at some comps in Standard & Poor's. You can actually say, show me Target's comp, a comparable company. Show me their ratios. And it'll just boom right there. It's just amazing how easy life is anymore. I'll just do it again. Equals, and I'm going to say net income or net earnings divided by total shareholders' investment. That's in some places that's called total shareholders' equity or shareholders' equity, whatever. It's that equity line, that last one. And yes, you will have to hunt around sometimes. And in one, more than one case, I did these on a midterm in a higher level course. And I had some of the poor students saying, where is this number? And I'm looking through, oh, they don't call it anything I've ever seen before for this company. It didn't strike me. Okay, so you kind of have to sometimes hunt around. There's your dinner. Now, current. Now, by the way, these are all percentages. And, I mean, no, quit it. Where is the stupid, oh, there it is. Really?
Not on
the right. There it is. I knew that. How many decimal places? It depends on the house rules. Some companies you work for, they'll say 4, 6. The book, I think, asks for 6 decimal places. I say 2. I mean, how much accuracy do you need when we're talking about this kind of stuff? It's like there's a point where you get into that whole thing. You probably remember something about significant digits. How accurate are you going to get? Okay, now, current ratio. This is equal to your current assets divided by your current liabilities. Really? There. Total current assets divided by your total current liability. Total current liability. Is there some reason this sucks? I did that wrong. Let me try that again. Divided by total current liabilities. So in other words, Target, if it liquidated all of its current assets, it could pay its current liabilities 1.03 times. Now, this one says, okay, let's do the same thing, except let's take out inventory. So I'm going to say equals open parenthesis, and I'm going to say current total current assets minus the inventory, and close the parentheses, and then divide that, by total current liabilities. My God. You know what I should do is I should make these sheets bigger. But that would mean that I'd have to admit that my eyes are going. What, really? Let's try that again. Equals the quick ratio. Open parenthesis. My God. Total current assets minus inventory divided by total current liability. So, taking the inventory out of it, because realistically, inventory, if I had to liquidate my inventory right instantly, I'd get pennies on the dollar for it. And as a matter of fact, there are companies that do that. They're called factor companies that will actually, if some corporation is desperate for cash, they'll call one of these companies and say, how much will you give us for this $10 million of inventory? And of course, what the factor company will say, $500,000, and we can have a check for you this afternoon. That's what will happen. As a matter of fact, if you go to a store like Big Lots and places like that, that's where they get a lot of their stuff, is because companies are desperate to dump inventory, and they just gobble it up at pennies on the dollar. In my own company, I have a storage unit with, at market, it's probably worth about $200,000 worth of artwork I've created over the years. But if I had to sell that right away, open the storage unit and say for sale, I'd probably get $1,000, if that, which is what's going to happen when I die. I'm sure my daughter will just open the doors and sell it so that she has some money to cremate me. Equals burn ratio. This is the one. The only thing that really matters is cash. How much cash could you generate if you had to pay your current liabilities today? Now, these numbers can be all over the place. There was an old saying in accounting, current assets should equal current liabilities. Bullshit. Companies have very different cash management policies. As a matter of fact, cash management has, in the last few years, become big stuff again. We had a course many, many years ago, cash management. And just this past months ago, the chairman asked me if I could do that course if we brought it back because there's such a demand for cash management. Everything is cash. I mean, profit means nothing. And so we'll probably bring that back sometime next year, spring of 2023. I'm hoping we will because companies want that. Debt to total assets. Just take your total debt. Now, in this one, use only the long-term debt. Just use the long-term debt. Now, some people say also include the current portion of long-term debt. I don't even worry about it because it's usually a small amount. See, it's less than 10% of this. So your long-term debt divided by your shareholders' investment. Oh, my ass. Try that again. Long-term debt divided by total assets. I was going to say. Now, write this down. This is a term. The capital structure of a company is a combination of debt and equity. The capital structure is a combination of debt and equity. So target here is 22.5% debt, which means that it's 77.5% equity. Now, the higher that capital structure is tilted toward debt, the riskier the company gets. However, the higher the portion of debt, the more the equity realizes gains to leverage. You see, as you borrow more and more money as a percent of all of the money in the company, the more of your company is paying a fixed cost that could earn huge amounts of equity. Think about it this way. Look, I borrow money and it's at 6%. Okay, what do I do with that? Well, I can do whatever the hell I want. I could earn 40% on it. And therefore, I have earned a massive return for my ROE. See, the lower the equity is in that ROE, the higher the ROE itself is because equity is the denominator. Now, I'm going to tell you something here. I'm going to teach you all how to become millionaires in about 10 years. I'm not even kidding. I can do that. You could also become insanely broke, so broke that you're pushing a shopping cart down Monroe Avenue in Chicago, sliding along on the ice and the winds off the lake. That could happen too. But I can show you how a lot of these young rich people became that way, using gains to leverage, making it so that almost all of what they used to invest in housing, they borrowed. So when the housing prices went through the roof, they paid a fixed amount back, but they kept all the rest of it. And I'll show you how that's done. And so if you do become a millionaire, please don't forget about me. Times interest earned. This is how many times over. That's the one I told you about. This is how many times over your operating income can pay your interest. Now, this is good and bad. Obviously, you don't want that to get near one because that means that you're getting close to a default situation. But the higher it is, the more I worry too because the company isn't realizing any gains to leverage. These companies, well, we don't borrow hardly any money because neither a lender or a borrower be, blah, blah. And you're also denying your shareholders the gains to leverage by doing that. Borrowing money is dangerous because what happens if you can't pay it back, but it's also how you leverage your gains. It's a two-way street. Now, the asset inventory turnover, this one is your sales divided by your inventory. This tells us in a material way how many times they cleared all of their inventory out selling it in the year. The higher this number, the better, except for one thing. Some companies, for example, just-in-time companies in Japan, theirs is infinite because they don't have inventory. They have the companies that provide the supplies right there next to them, and when they need a car door, order it, it's in, and they put it on the car kind of thing. So there's never any inventory, so the sales over inventory is sales divided by zero, so it's infinite. There's a problem with that, and I'll talk about that next week. There's also a problem with having this too high. If you're clearing inventory, and this is what's just happened to us, if you're clearing inventory that fast and you have a bottleneck, your whole flow goes to hell. We need it tomorrow. We order tomorrow for tomorrow's sales. We order the next days. What happens if there's a bottleneck and you can't do it? Suddenly, oops, our shelves are empty. So it's not always the best thing. And this is the same thing with sales over, revenues over your total assets. How many times over are you turning over all of your assets? Now, I'm going to finish this on Monday, and then we'll go on. And I will upload this right tonight. I'll upload this. Asset turnover. This is sales over sales over inventory. This is sales over total assets. And that financial analysis formula sheet is also in your resources tab, too.